Let me introduce Peg Burnett. She is the Chief Financial Officer for Denver Health, Denver Health and Hospital Authority. She's held an active certified public accountant license since 1991 and is a fellow in the Healthcare Financial Management Association. An important part of Ms. Burnett's job is understanding and analyzing government policy as it impacts Denver Health, whose funding largely comes from public sources. Colorado's governor appointed her to serve on a statewide Blue Ribbon Commission on healthcare reform in 2007, and in 2010, Ms. Burnett received the CFO of the Year Award from the Denver Business Journal. And with that, I'd like to introduce Ms. Burnett.
Good afternoon. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit different perspective. I'm a chief financial officer of a public safety net hospital-based integrated system in Denver. I'm trying to react to and strategize about and understand healthcare reform and figure out what we're actually going to do to try to stay operational and to serve as many patients as we can under our mission, which is to serve all citizens of the city and county of Denver regardless of their ability to pay. I'm just going to give, and really my talk could be applied a little bit to all public safety net hospital-based systems throughout the nation because I participate in the National Association of Public Hospitals. Many hospitals in the United States, most public safety net hospitals, are facing these same things. Denver Health cares for about 163,000 individual patients, which is about a third of Denver County's population. Our org structure is that we're a political subdivision of the state. So one of the strategies that has made us successful to date has been that we split off from city and county government in 1997. And there were a variety of reasons why we couldn't have been successful staying with that model that I'd be happy to go into, but really that's one of the things that has made the difference for us. We stand alone for our financials, though, so to the extent that we start to lose money and can't make it up, there's no one to bail us out. So that's one of the things that makes me lose sleep at night. We, like other public safety net hospital-based systems, we provide a lot of uninsured care, $390 million per year, roughly. Our annual operating budget is $670 million. Our gross charges, so our billed charges, last year were about $1.2 billion, and on that we collected about 24%, $292 million. So not your ideal business model. You know, I think about it as, you know, you go to Frontier, you buy a ticket, it's $240, but you really only have to pay $48, and Frontier absorbs the rest somehow. So, you know, when you look at the gap between our 292 and our 670 in expense, we make that up through disproportionate share funding and some of the other supplemental payment sources that Dr. Beinman talked about, as well as other sort of innovative things that we've done to create different strategies to generate kind of private revenue. This is a picture of our system. And I'm not going to go through every component, but Denver Health Medical Center is our hospital. We have 477 licensed beds, about 26,000 admissions per year. And as I mentioned, we serve, for the uninsured, we serve the city and county of Denver. We also obviously see all Medicaid and Medicare patients that present at Denver Health. And we are marketing to commercially insured patients because to date, that's been an important source of our revenue. Denver Health also runs the public health department for the city and county of Denver. So we think that, and then we have community health, and I'm not going to focus on the community health perspective because there's another talk on that, but we have eight Section 330 community health centers throughout the city and county of Denver. And we think that this integration between public, community health, and the hospital system and specialty care are, you know, and all of the components that we have are very important. So later you're going to hear me say that integration is an important success strategy for safety net systems. And where we can't actually integrate, alignment to become a safety net system versus a safety net hospital, as Dr. Beinman talked about. Where we're the components we don't have and in the Denver health system, and these really hurt us, are outpatient mental health. We don't do that. There's a long history behind that. It's done by another provider in the city and county of Denver. That system is very stressed, but we don't have it integrated into our system. We also don't have long-term care, and we're very short on specialty care. And we're one of very few providers in the area that will provide specialty care to the uninsured. So you've heard some of this, and I'm not going to be repetitive, but you know, as you already know, from our perspective, the goals for reform were achieving near universal coverage, improving access to primary care, improving quality, creating transparency, expanding the workforce for healthcare, and bending the cost curve. And this one is very important to me as a chief financial officer, looking at how do we actually manage under the new system. And probably more than I do about some of the insurance reforms. We've talked about the expansion of Medicaid and the subsidized premiums that are going to happen by 2014. There are going to be small business incentives for small businesses to cover their employees, and then, of course, the individual mandate. When I look at all of this and say, what does it really mean to us as a public hospital-based safety net system, I think it's generally good. But there's some important pitfalls that we need to think about and some strategies that we need to enact in order to be successful in the future. And as I touched on earlier, as Dr. Beineman also talked about, safety net hospitals usually have a patient mix that is a large percentage of Medicaid and uninsured patients, and we pay through the gap between the Medicare that we pay for the uninsured and the Medicaid shortfall through a mix of these sources here. Disproportionate share funding, other Medicaid supplemental payments that we, for example, in Colorado, we have a provider fee. We have what's called upper payment limit funding that goes to pay for Medicaid shortfalls. And then some states or localities have extra payments out of general funds for uninsured care. And in Denver, we're fortunate enough to have a $27 million payment from the city and county of Denver that is out of their general fund that is dates back historically, but really has not increased since at least 1985. Also importantly for all hospitals, including safety nets, is the cost shift from insurance. So the profit from insurance goes to help pay for the uninsured. This is one of the things that will be squeezed under health reform. Insurance companies will be feeling the squeeze about covering more people and perhaps covering people that are sicker. They in turn are going to want to negotiate lower rates with hospitals, which takes away, you know, some or all of our profit that we now use to kind of fill the gap. One thing to think about that's very important when you think about a hospital-based system is EMTALA law, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, passed in 1986, as I'm sure you know, requires hospitals to treat people who come in, present with emergent conditions in their emergency department. It obviously was needed, it was put there for a reason, because dumping was happening before that, still happens, but now we have a means to report it. But under that law, in my opinion, you know, the dysfunction of our healthcare system now and the dysfunction of our future healthcare system all comes down to what happens in the emergency department. So the people who aren't going to be covered under any of these new provisions will probably end up in the emergency department. And when I think of our emergency department, I think about a fire hose sort of being fitted into a plastic pipe that then ends with a little funnel. Because we have, you know, sort of the people who aren't covered in anything else, so they're going to an emergency. We have limited capacity in the emergency department. And then there, one of the things we really struggle with are the limited options for discharge or placement in the community for our patients. And I think there are some promising things in the new law, like the community-based transitions program, to help us try to get people out, avoid readmissions. But that's a real worry for me, is how this all plays out for the populations that in the end aren't covered. At Denver Health, we have about 31% of our patients who are uninsured, 34% Medicaid, 12% Medicare, and 23% private insurance. So we don't have a high volume of Medicare patients. Other public hospitals do, but usually public hospitals have more Medicaid than Medicare. So, you know, these are things you already know. Health reform is expected to decrease the uninsured population with corresponding increases in Medicaid and individual market patient through the individual mandate. What I meant here was that for us, there's less impact for Medicare, so we're not focusing on it as much, but clearly there's lots of Medicare impacts. Value-based purchasing, quality requirements, reductions in Medicare Advantage rates. So there's a lot going on with Medicare as well. So these are kind of my worries that although So bad debt, you know, when people don't pay their bills or for charity care for the uninsured, that will decrease because more people will be covered. But now, what if somebody selects the lowest cost plan and they have a high out-of-pocket? They're not any more capable or enabled to pay that high cost than they were for the whole bill before. So what's going to happen with that? The hospital is going to wind up with a large amount of what we call self-pay after insurance, which is when insurance is paid, person has an out-of-pocket they need to pay, but they can't pay it. So we have to write it off as bad debt. And at least right now, that's not going to qualify to draw down disproportionate share funding. So at the same time as this is happening, our disproportionate share funding, as was pointed out in the earlier presentation, is being cut. I think insurers will put the squeeze on providers. We talked about disproportionate share going down. And then the gap in, you know, those covered under the new plan and what will happen. And we talked in the last presentation about the undocumented. That's one category of people. There will be people who decide not to enroll in insurance because it's easier to pay the tax penalty if they're caught. There will be people who can't really navigate the system or don't understand it. And then there's the gap between now and 2014 and how do we bridge that. You know, as Dr. Gabbo, my boss, who's our CEO, likes to say, these people are not going to be like in cold storage until 2014 with their health needs. So, you know, to add to that, we and other hospitals need to make investments in quality to ensure that we meet the new quality standards. And we think that that's a good thing. Quality is a high priority focus at Denver Health. We're actually we have the lowest mortality rate in the United States in the University Health Systems Consortium database for quality. So we focus on that a lot, but it costs money. So we need to put investments in that, further investments in that. And then infrastructure, as Dr. Beidman pointed out, we're going to have to try to compete with other hospitals for the newly insured and the Medicaid patients. We have to put money into our facilities, customer service programs, make sure that we continue to improve our processes to treat the newly insured. And safety net hospitals typically have fewer resources than for-profit hospitals or even not-for-profit charitable hospitals to be able to pay for these things. Another thing is IT infrastructure. With the electronic health record requirements, we're going to have to put a lot into IT infrastructure. So our primary approaches to dealing with this are integration, which we've already done a lot of, but now we want to look more on the outpatient mental health, long-term care, the pieces we don't have, and then shoring up what we don't have for specialty care. We also have implemented Lean. Lean, as you probably know, is a performance improvement model designed by Toyota. Now you can say, well, Toyota hasn't been doing so good, but Toyota has been doing, you know, so I get that all the time. Well, what are you doing Lean? But actually Toyota's been doing Lean for 35 years. And so, you know, Toyota didn't just suddenly implement Lean and then things went downhill. They had some problems, but Lean has made a huge difference for us. We implemented it in 2005, and it's about basically taking the waste out of processes. And in the hospital, we look at process after process. We put teams together that work in a rapid way. They take a week to solve a problem, and we focus a lot on having financial results from that. And since that time, we've generated through either increased revenue or cost savings about $70 million since that time. So, you know, do I have a $70 million bottom line? No. But would I be a lot worse off without this? Absolutely. And then for some reason my third bullet dropped off here, but, you know, obviously to bridge the gap, we and other public safety net institutions have to try to take advantage of the things in the health reform bill that might help us bridge between now and 2014. The global payment demonstration model, accountable care organization funds, the Center for Innovation funding, anything that does get authorized, we need to try to access those funds to help us bridge the gap between now and that date. I've talked a little bit about integration. We think that integrated health delivery systems like Denver Health are well positioned to receive funding under health reform. The reason that we think that is because of they're less expensive, and I'll show you some examples in a minute. Secondly, that we can direct the patient towards the most cost-effective but appropriate level of care for their needs. So we have the emergency department, we have primary care, we have advice nurse phone systems within Denver Health, where the patient can actually get a prescription over the phone from the advice nurse if that's what they need, thus preventing a visit even to into primary care if they don't need it. We wouldn't have that if we didn't have control of all those pieces. One of the reasons we think about long-term care is because right now we don't have any control over who's willing to take a patient that we want to discharge to them. In Colorado, long-term care facilities can just say, well, you know, our quota for Medicaid is filled. Although we take Medicaid, we don't have any more Medicaid slots, so sorry, hospital, you're going to have to keep them. Thus, patients stay in the hospital in a setting that is not appropriate for them until we can find placement, sometimes for, you know, nearly a year or more. So having those pieces in an integrated system, or at least more closely affiliated, we think, helps those kind of things. When some of the new payment mechanisms like global bundling or demonstration programs with accountable care or managed care components come through, we think that an integrated system is well suited for those because, you know, we receive the payment, then we can manage the patient and the funds within the payment that we get. Sounds a lot like managed care. I know people don't like that, but we sort of think of the terms as interchangeable. And at Denver Health, at least, we don't look at it as us assigning a gatekeeper and then let's find ways to keep the patient out of the system. We just want to put them in the most appropriate venue of care somewhere, hopefully within Denver Health. Other advantages are obvious. I mean, we have for our 8 primary care clinics and our hospital, our ambulance 911 system that we run, our public health department, a centralized administrative structure. So instead of having a director for each of our clinics, executive director, we have one executive director over all the clinics who's on the executive staff with the hospital administrator. We have one human resources division, one accounting and finance department that does all the billing for everyone. So, you know, this obviously saves cost, and we've been able to demonstrate that. And so the other thing that I wanted to mention that I didn't at the beginning is that our physicians are on staff. So that's important that we have our physicians and our professional services integrated with the hospital. It doesn't mean that we can tell the physicians X and they're always going to do it, but it's more effective, we think, than trying to work with a number of outside practices and get everybody marching to the same sheet. And we also think that that alignment of goals is more cost effective. I talked about reduced cost of overhead. There's a synergistic effect with the funding sources that come in. We can direct them to the area that needs the funding the most. Management of care. So ultimately, you know, we think integrated systems like ours are well positioned. And then I talked a little bit about lean. But basically, Lean provides a philosophy, which is to eliminate waste, a set of principles and a tool set of activities that you can do that are structured, and you can look at how do we eliminate waste in a structured manner while not doing any harm in the process. We think that the tool set is intuitive. One of the things that I've seen that is most beneficial from Lean is the breakdown of silos. So we say it we're integrated, but you know, that hasn't always been how we act. Even though we're integrated with our clinics and our hospital, people would be like, well, I'm in the hospital, I don't know what the clinics do, and vice versa. The Lean process, we form interdisciplinary teams that work together. As people get to know each other, we all work together better. And that may sound like a cliche, but it actually has worked. It provides initial rapid results, which we need. You know, in a hospital, everything's rapid, got to hurry up, emergency department, crisis mode. And we've embedded it, we believe, in our culture. And so I'll leave you with this slide where I talked about we've saved about, now this slide's 66, but we're now up to about $70 million. We really ramped up since we started to track the results in July of 2006. And so this is, we've got to bend the cost curve. I guess the piece I just wanted to touch on to kind of go back to what I said at the beginning is we're looking at this as we're going to be needing to see more people. People have Medicaid, they have insurance, they're going to have more demand. The base that the funding's being set on is not right now adequate to cover the cost of what we have now. The incremental pieces aren't adequate if we keep the same cost structure and mentality. So we've got to do something about changing that, and Lean is our approach to doing that. So I know I covered a lot of area in this, but this is what we're doing. Thank you. Yes.
This is the third presentation I've seen at Denver in the last few days.
Well, good.
Okay,
and
because to a lot of people across the country, Denver Health has been something of a different. Is it unique to the Denver scene, or is it something that's replicable?
Mm-hmm.
Andy, Dr. Byman pointed out is that one of the things that people could be looking for across the system over the next few years is to look at successful models and how to translate them. And I think I would hope that Denver Health would kind of think about that and help create its models in such a way that other parts of the country can say, well, I can pick up that piece and I can pick up another piece. My question is related to the Medicaid and the new Medicaid funding.
Yes.
And the additional supplement rates.
Right.
It would seem to me that Denver Health is in a unique position to benefit in a very big way from both the expanded number of Medicaid recipients as well as the increased reimbursement rates.
Yes, we are. I think we're not sure exactly how those are going to come down or what they're going to be, but we know that the Medicaid funding that we're getting right now is not enough to care for the population that we see, so we have to figure out ways to fund the shortfall. If indeed the new rates, you know, fully fund the cost, we'll be in good shape. I think our biggest challenge at Denver Health and probably at many other safety net systems is going to be our ability to provide access to care for the patients. Right now we have, you know, as I said earlier, 8 clinics. We have a waiting list of people waiting to be seen. The feds are not going to want to give us money so that we can put people on a waiting list. So that's one of the challenges that we need to work through. If we can do that, yes, I think we will be well positioned. As far as you know, replicating what we do, I know Dr. Gabo, our CEO, is really out there talking about our model. And I think the collaborative care model in the health reform legislation, had it been funded, would have been an ideal way to get that going and was really exactly what we do in Denver. So hope that answers your question. Thank you. Yes?
Say something about your private sector competitors. Do they want to serve the newly insured, or are they just lost to them? Well, I mean, I hear sort of two things. One is there's not enough payments right now, they're probably going to lose, and you have to compete with these private sector hospitals and health reforms. So what's their perspective?
Well, I think the private sector hospitals here are going to want to serve that population because that's the way that it's going to be, and if they don't do so, they're going to miss out. And especially with the enhanced Medicaid reimbursement, I think that will be an issue. We've already seen that a little bit because Colorado enacted a provider fee here, and so that bumped Medicaid rates up. And suddenly hospitals that had not historically been interested in Medicaid business became interested. So I think we will see more of that, actually. So we see that as a challenge. Yes?
What is your process for ensuring that your individuals that are eligible for Medicaid are actually enrolled in it? And what are the plans in terms of, as the expansion goes into effect, getting more and more of the newly eligibles actually enrolled so that they have that payment source?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. We're kind of uniquely situated here, but this could also be replicated, what we do here. Denver, the state has delegated Medicaid eligibility responsibility to Denver Health as a medical assistance site. So we have our own staff of enrollment specialists who screen every patient for programs they could be eligible for and get them on to whatever program. We expect to be adjusting this as we go for any program for which they might be eligible, but I think the medical assistance site model that the state of Colorado uses could be replicated elsewhere and probably and should be. And we have really grown our Medicaid enrollment since we implemented this in 1998. And we pay for it through state Medicaid outstationing funding, which is for the purpose of outreach. Thank you.
Let's do one more question, and then we'll try to have some time at the end.
Yes.
Mind speaking specifically for just a minute to undocumented immigrants and how they access their access different depending on what part of the system they're trying to access, and then also billing. Are they able to access any financial assistance programs, or is billing total self-pay?
Okay, sure. Yes. So we do see undocumented immigrants in our primary care clinics, and we created a financial assistance program that is not state or federal funded that they can get screened for and pay fairly low sliding fee scale rates for primary care. It's called the Denver Health Financial Assistance Program. So they can get screened for that, and then they have access to primary care. It doesn't apply to hospital and specialty services, so for those, they're self-pay. They're expected to pay a deposit, and then we bill them after the fact. So that's kind of how we do it. One of the things that we're worried about is, you know, because of the stress on our system, and we're starting to have to put people on the waiting list, those folks are on the waiting list along with others. So it's that's a difficult problem. But right now we don't do anything. So the enrollment specialist group that I just talked about, when an undocumented immigrant comes in, they screen them to see what they're eligible for. If they're not eligible for any federal programs because they're undocumented, they can be screened. And on an income basis, they can be screened for the Denver Health Financial Assistance Program. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.